two of the great founder acharyas of our Vaishnav Sampradayas, Srila Madhvacharya and Sri Ramanujacharya. Saraswati Thakur, who is our Param Guru. In all of his temples have glorified these great personalities. In fact, it was a tradition that Srila Saraswati Thakur established that in the four corners of the temples he constructed, he would have murtis of the four great acharyas of the Vaishnav Sampradayas, Sri Nimbarkar Acharya, Sri Vishnu Swami, Sri Madhva Acharya, and Srila Ramanuja Acharya. Because it was their contribution that revived the glorious system of bhakti within human society. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam idam rajarshaya vidhu sakhalaneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa, that I originally spoke this transcendental knowledge to the sun god Vibhishwan, who in turn instructed it to his son Manu, who instructed it to Ikshvaku. And in this way, through parampara, this knowledge is coming down. So there are four paramparas which are all originating from the personality of Godhead himself. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat puranitam. Only Krishna, the personality of Godhead, has the right to create religion. He is the sole and exclusive author of religion. And any mortal being, however scholarly, powerful they may be, has any right to create a religious system. Vedaischa sarver aham eva vejo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. I am the compiler of the Vedas, and all the Vedas am I to be known. So therefore, any knowledge which is not coming in line with these great sampradayas, which are originating from God himself, we really do not know whether it is true or not true. Therefore, the Supreme Lord, he spoke to Rudra, Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. Lord Shiva is none other than an expansion of Vishnu himself, but in the role of a Vaishnava. So when Lord Narayan spoke to Rudra, from Rudra came a disciplic succession called the Rudra Sampradaya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also spoke to the four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumar. And through him, through these Kumaras, the transcendental knowledge of Krishna's message has been passed down through disciplic succession. The Supreme Lord Narayan spoke transcendental knowledge of pure devotional service to his eternal consort Lakshmi Devi. And through her, the Sri Sampradaya has come down. And of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the very beginning of creation, Sri Krishna, spoke to the original created being within the universe, Brahma. And from him, the Brahma Sampradaya has come. In course of time, these great sampradayas, as Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of Gita, they become very much naturally compromised, and they become watered down. And the real spirit of bhakti is to a large degree lost. Not necessarily amongst everyone, but amongst the general mass of people following. Therefore, just as Krishna explains in Gita that he came to revive this disciplic succession that he originally began, in the same way, he sent his eternal associates in the form of Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, Madhvacharya, and Ramanujacharya for the purpose of reviving the true spirit of bhakti of those sampradayas. And this particular age, which was between 700 and 1,000 years back, when these great acharyas appeared, was really an age of great renaissance of Vaishnavism. It is when the true spirit of pure bhakti was being invested within the hearts of so many. Because the tendency of all religions is they become ritualistic, they become traditionalistic, they become philosophical, but the spirit of surrender, the spirit of commitment, the spirit of love and service becomes lost in the forest of all of these external forms. Therefore, the great acharyas, their business, according to time, place, and circumstance, is to do the needful, to revive the original spirit of pure devotional service, of utter surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And of course, we find that in the lives of all of these great acharyas, there was always great opposition to them. There has to be. If there was no opposition, there would be no need for them to appear. They came to reveal the truth where there was darkness. And darkness hates truth. Just like Prabhupada uses the example that an owl is very disturbed by the sunlight, and bats, like flying rats, they hate the light of the sun. There was a great and famous novel written in Europe. It's called Dracula. People laugh, but actually it's a true story. His castle is still in Romania. He's a national hero. He's the only person from Romania probably that ever became famous worldwide. But he was actually a person. But he was a Rakshasa. And he had all mystic powers. He was tantric. And he gained his powers by drinking the blood of others. He used to go and steal innocent babies, drink their blood. And he could not tolerate the light of the day. He did everything at night. He lost all his powers in the day. He hated the night. He hated the sun. So, This is actually very symbolic how Krishna arranges such historical events, because this is the condition of all demoniac people, materialistic people. They love darkness. They love ignorance. Because in their ignorance, they are free. They are liberated to engage in all of their independent, selfish, egoistic activity. And also, in darkness, they have tremendous power to control others' lives. But in the face of light, they lose all their power. They lose all their independence. So therefore, people who are demoniac, people who are too much attached to sense gratification, they hate light. They love darkness. They love ignorance. And in the name of knowledge, they present ignorance. Krishna explains in Gita that what is taken to be religion is irreligion, and what is taken to be irreligion is religion. They are very much attached to presenting religion, but actually, it is only a guise. It is only a way to bewilder others into darkness. In Ishvapanishad, it is explained that someone who presents knowledge but is actually presenting ignorance, such a person has to be cast into the lowest recesses of hellish existence. But in Kali Yuga, this is very much what is the normal condition of human society. Those people steeped in ignorance and not in darkness, they want to present so-called religion, so-called philosophy, so-called science, only to keep people in the folly of illusion. The light of true knowledge of God, surrender to the absolute truth, is death to their egos. And they live exclusively for the purpose of serving their egos. So you can understand how such people, like bats in the dark, they're terrified of light. They're terrified of true knowledge of God. And therefore, they will do anything and everything to stop this light from penetrating human society. So we find wherever there is a great preacher of the Lord who is presenting the brilliant light of Krishna's mercy, he's always tremendously opposed by the forces of darkness. But depending on the sweet will of the Lord, they are willing to risk their lives. Even we find when the Lord himself comes, when Sri Ram came, how many demons, they could not tolerate his existence on earth. Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Duhasan, so many demons came. When Krishna came, demon after demon after demon, they could not tolerate his existence on earth. And similarly, amongst all the great saints of all the great religions. So therefore, you could understand, if you're presenting light, you'll be opposed by the forces of darkness. And Kali Yuga means basically everyone is, to some extent, being influenced by darkness. And those leaders amongst men who are exploiting the situation, they will attack. If they're not attacking, that means you're only presenting another form of darkness. That means they're not worried about you. They don't care. But Krishna always protects his devotees. So the devotees don't mind. They're encouraged. The more the opposition comes, the more they feel, now Krishna's taking interest. When the devotees are in a helpless condition, then Krishna takes interest to save his devotee. Do you think Narayan took as much interest in Prahlad before he was being cast into all sorts of dangerous conditions as after? The Lord took such interest in Prahlad because of the difficulties he was undergoing that he incarnated in his most magnanimous form and offered him every benediction. So therefore, a devotee doesn't care, doesn't mind, let anyone say what they want, let anyone do what they want. I have faith in Krishna's will. I will go on serving my Gurudev. So Sri Ramanujacharya, he was preaching. There's a story which explains how there was a king who was a Mayavadi. Couldn't tolerate this idea of surrendering to Krishna. He wanted everyone to think that I am God. You are God, I am God, we can do what we want, we're God. Follow some discipline, but ultimately we become the absolute truth. So he could not tolerate. Ramanujacharya was convincing so many people in so many ways. So it is described that he decided to challenge Ramanuja to a debate with his greatest scholars. The idea is if Ramanuja was defeated, he would have to accept the king's version and preach that and only that. And if he won, what they would do is they would kill him. So they'd never have to think about this rascal again. So, what did you call it? Such a situation, you can't win. So when the news came to Ramanujacharya and his followers, they were thinking, what to do, our Gurudev? So one of his disciples, he was actually a Grihastha. His name was Kuresh. Kuresh approached Sri Ramanuja and he said, my dear Gurudev, please, let me go in your place. Certainly I will be able to defeat them. Your philosophy is undefeatable. So I will establish your glories, and if I die, there's really no loss to the world. But if you die, there's no hope for the world. So let me go in your place. Ramanujacharya, his heart was melted by the love and the sacrifice of his disciple. This is real sannyas. Although he was a family man, he was totally renounced. He was willing to give his life for his guru. This is the highest form of renunciation. Not simply wearing a saffron cloth and carrying a danda, but this spirit of being willing to sacrifice one's life, that is real renunciation in its purest form. We are not concerned with the form of sannyas, we are concerned with the spirit. And that spirit should be equally accepted by our grihasthas and our brahmacharis, as well as our sannyasis. Wherever there is that full commitment and that willingness to sacrifice your life and everything within your life for the service of Gurudev, that is real sannyas. So Kuresh, he begged, he pleaded with Ramanujacharya, please give me this service. So Ramanuja said, all right, So Quraysh put on the saffron cloth of Ramanuja, and Ramanuja put on the white cloth of Quraysh, and Ramanuja through the back way left. He snuck away. And Quraysh went out, and the guards took him to the king. Soldiers came to bring him to the king. And everyone thought, this is Ramanuja. There's a similar story of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was performing a parikram of Navadvip Dham, at one time he was threatened. People came to stone him and to kill him. And so they were waiting for him to come out. And one of his disciples, who happened to look somewhat like him, his name was Bhakti Pragya Keshav Maharaj. At that time he was a brahmachari. He later became Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami, Sannyas Guru. But at the time he was a brahmachari, and he begged, he pleaded with his Gurudev, let me take the danda and the sannyas robes and let me go out and get stoned. So on the pleading of his disciple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati agreed. And Bhakti Pragya Keshav Maharaj went out. And as they were going through the procession, he was being stoned like anything. Of course, Krishna protected him. Krishna saved him. But he was willing. He had that willingness to die to protect his guru. So this Quraysh had that spirit. So he went to the court of the king, and they had a debate. And naturally, armed with the wisdom of his Gurudev, he utterly defeated all of them. And they were so angry that the king just said, "This." They didn't kill him, because it is described that one of the relatives of the king was at one time in a very difficult situation, and Ramanuja saved her. So because of that, she pleaded with the king, you cannot kill him. He has saved my life. So they decided to take out his eyes. So with burning hot rods, they plucked out Quraysh's eyes. And they cast him in a terrible situation. And ultimately, by the will of God, Krishna is in everyone's heart, someone came and guided Quraysh back to Sri Rangam, where Ramanujacharya was. And Ramanuja, he was so much grateful with the love of his disciple, that he brought that disciple before Sri Ranganathji, the deity of Sri Rangam, and prayed to Sri Rangam for the benefit of his disciple. And a breeze came from the lotus feet of Sri Ranganath upon his eyes and restored his vision. So this opposition was there. Also with Sri Madhavacharya, so much opposition. Sometimes because he was an incarnation of Bhima, sometimes he actually had to manifest his strength and his prowess of Bhima to overcome this opposition. But he was constantly being attacked with people who were trying to defeat him, either physically or scholarly, academically, philosophically. But these great stalwarts, with complete faith and devotion in the absolute truth, They never swerved under any condition from that truth. And this is the example that they have established for us. That whatever Krishna originally spoke, they were chaste and faithful to present that and only that, even at the risk of their lives. So it is described that Sri Madhavacharya, on this disappearance day, he left this world in Udupi. Which was the capital of Madhvacharya's teachings. And he was instructing his disciples on his favorite scripture, the Aitareya Upanishad. And while he was instructing them, it is described right there, his body simply disappeared, and flowers fell. The demigods showered flowers upon the sitting place. And all that was left was the flowers. He told his disciples before that my eternal spiritual master, Vyasadeva, he is in Badrikashram. When I leave this world, I will go back to him in Badrikashram. So we can understand by his words and his followers, they all accept that he went back to Badri. That as he was preaching the words of his guru, the Aitareya Upanishad was written by his guru Vyasadeva, he was simply meditating on the lotus feet of his guru Maharaj, repeating his words, and he left. And Ramanujacharya, he was very old. For about 60 years of the last part of his life, he practically never left Sri Rangam. He preached and traveled for many, many years. For most of his life, he simply traveled to practically every corner of India, preaching the message of pure devotional service. But his final years, because he became so prominent, people from every corner were coming to see him in Sri Rangakshetra. And there he indicated to his disciples that he was going to leave this world. So they were begging him, please, how will we ever live without you? And he explained that I'm very old. I have to leave sometime. That is the nature of this world. But I am always with you in my instructions. I will always be within your heart, guiding you, directing you. You will never be without me if you simply maintain your faith and preserve the chastity of your obedience to my order. I will always be with you. They said, no, we must have your physical form. So what he did, he had a murti carved. It took 3 days to carve. And that murti looked like him. And he told his disciples that I will enter into this deity, and you can always come and you can see me. You can always hear me by reading my books, by remembering my instructions. You can always see me by seeing this beautiful murti. And then it is described that Ramanujacharya installed the murti by breathing into the crown of the deity. And then it is described how he put his head on the lap of one of his disciples, Govinda, and he put his feet on the lap of another disciple. And they brought for him the sandals of his Gurudev, Jamunacharya. And with his eyes fixed on the sandals of his Guru Maharaj, completely immersed in the thought of his Gurudev, he left this world. So these are the greatest, the topmost, the most important of all acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. And how did they leave? Simply meditating on the lotus feet of their gurus. To set the example, of course, for us, that even in the highest positions, such souls, out of their humility, they never want to approach Krishna directly. They always want to approach Krishna through the mercy of their guru. What is the highest position possible? The highest position possible is Goloka Vrindavan. And even there, nobody approaches Krishna directly, practically. There is a whole hierarchy of gurus. Ultimately, Sri Radharani. And only a few of the Sakis approach Radharani directly. There are 8 Sakis. And all others, they approach through the Manjaris, the Sakis, Gopis, Gopas. So Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, although they had such high, pure realization, still, they wanted to show the world that at the very final end of their life, they were approaching Krishna. They were meditating on Narayan through the mercy of their spiritual master, meditating on his lotus feet. We are reading final instructions that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave to his disciples. Also in Prabhupada's Lilamrita, one of the most important and essential parts is the final instructions he gave during his last days to all of his followers. Today I would like to read, in summary, the final instructions that Sri Ramanujacharya has given to us just prior to his departure from this world to the eternal abode of Vaikuntha. What happened is Ramanujacharya sat and he went into an ecstatic trance. And his disciples, although he was immersed in meditation, his disciples did not know whether he was living or dead. He was not moving. He was practically not breathing. So understanding their condition, he came out of his trance. On hearing their cries, Ramanujacharya came out of his trance and said to his disciples, everyone listen carefully. My dear children, why do you cry out in lamentation like uneducated men? Do you think this body can endure forever? Am I not fixed in your hearts for all time? Therefore, give up this useless wailing and understand the will of the Lord. To this the disciples all replied, O Master, as always your instructions are perfect. Nonetheless, it is impossible for us to bear the pain of separation, which must surely overwhelm us. If you leave us now, out of pity for your children, we beg you to remain with us for some time. In response to this request, Ramanujacharya agreed to stay with them for 3 more days. He ordered that all his disciples should come there, and when they were assembled, he delivered his final instructions. Srila Prabhupada left the same way. Prabhupada was ready to leave his body, and the devotees all gathered together, the leaders of the movement, and they asked Kirtanananda Maharaj to beg Prabhupada to stay. So Srila Bhaktipada came to Prabhupada's, with all the leaders of ISKCON gathered around the bed. Srila Prabhupada, on their behalf, he came to Prabhupada's bed and started weeping like a child. And Prabhupada put his hand on Kirtanananda Swami's head and said, "Who is this? This isn't my Kirtanananda." And he was simply crying and crying. He said, "Prabhupada, Krishna will allow you to do whatever you want. Please, we cannot live without you. Please stay. Please, please ask Krishna if you could stay. Because whatever you ask him, he will let you do." And Prabhupada had already resigned himself to leave. He was ready to leave at that moment. And he said, "All right, I will stay." He agreed on the humble request of his disciples to remain for some time. He ordered that all of his disciples should come there. Prabhupada also ordered that. And when they were assembled, he delivered his final instructions. "Worship all Vaishnavas as you worship your guru." This is his first instruction. I will repeat. "Worship all Vaishnavas as you worship your guru," he told them. "Have faith in the previous acharyas and never be controlled by the senses. Never be satisfied simply by worldly knowledge. Study the scriptures which describe the glories of the Supreme Lord. Transcendental knowledge can overcome the pushings of the mind and senses. Be indifferent to the promptings of the mind. Always relish the chanting of the holy name and qualities of the Lord. The best way to serve the Lord is rendering service to his devotees. Never follow the ways of a Vaishnava for material gain. Always endeavor for purity. Every day spend some time in contemplating the greatness of the spiritual master. And every day study the teachings of the Vaishnava acharyas. Always associate with those who are surrendered to the Lord. Avoid those who teach paths other than the devotional service and those interested in sensual pleasures. One who sees the deity as stone, the guru as an ordinary man, the devotee in terms of caste or bodily designation, Charan Amrit as ordinary water, the holy name of the Lord as a mundane sound vibration, or the Supreme Lord as one of the demigods, is certainly destined for hellish life." And then it is described that his disciples, they questioned how they should conduct themselves. And he spoke, "One who has surrendered to Lord Narayan should not be concerned about his future, depending always on the Lord's mercy. All duties should be performed as acts of devotion to the Lord and never for material gain. Study the Srivahasya and teach it to others. This service is the most pleasing to the Lord." He's explaining that preaching the message of the spiritual master, Srivahasya is his commentary. Preaching the message of the guru, there is nothing more pleasing to the Lord than that. Similarly, Prabhupada explained in his last teachings that read my books, distribute these books, distribute the knowledge of these books, there is nothing more pleasing to the Lord than this. "If this is not possible, then study the teachings of other devotees and then instruct some disciples. If you are unable to do this, then go to a holy place and reside there, or go to Yadavadri and serve the Lord there." So here Ramanujacharya is saying, the best thing you could do is preach enthusiastically with great determination the word of your guru. If you cannot do that, if you do not have such a strong connection to me, then you study the teachings of the devotees of mine. And under their guidance, you preach the message of the Lord. And he says, if you are unable to do this, then you go to a holy place and do bhajan. If you cannot do this, then remain where you are and surrender to your guru and meditate on the Vaishnava mantras. If all of these are impossible, then simply seek out a pure-hearted Vaishnava and associate with him constantly. Discriminate carefully between friends, enemies, and those who are indifferent. Those who are Vaishnavas will be your friends. The atheists and blasphemers will despise and hate you, and the worldly men will be indifferent to you. Associate joyful with the devotees. Rigorously avoid the blasphemers, and never be disturbed by the materialistic plans of worldly men. There's only one more page. Everyone stay here. Never flatter princes and worldly men, seeking to earn your livelihood thereby. Remember that the Supreme Lord always takes care of those who are surrendered to him. Take shelter of him and have faith in him alone. If you follow these instructions, then you will never be separated from me. Why should one grieve over the disappearance of the temporary body? Thank you very much.